From Rectangle Health, this is the Modern Practice Podcast, a show that provides you with fresh perspectives and practical advice from industry experts in the ever-changing world of healthcare technology. Every episode, we tackle a timely topic to help you stay current and simplify the business side of healthcare. Without further ado...
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Modern Practice Podcast presented by Rectangle Health. We appreciate you tuning in, liking, subscribing, and following along as we deliver meaningful conversations with expert guests to help transform your practice and simplify the business side of healthcare. Today, we're talking about creating a culture of success at the practice, and we've got a really great episode in store for you here today as we welcome Stephen J. Anderson to the show. Stephen is a first-time guest on the podcast, but no stranger to Rectangle Health. He's taken the time to host many of our continuing education webinars, most notably, as many of you have already joined, the annual dental billing and coding session. Stephen is the founder of Total Patient Service Institute, co-founder of Crown Council, and the Smiles for Life Foundation. As an entrepreneur, presenter, author, philanthropist, he's developed systems for success for professionals, executives, and youth. And as the founder of over a dozen businesses, Stephen has propelled healthcare organizations and individuals to the highest levels of performance and productivity. He's been named Businessman of the Year and is an Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year finalist. And without further ado, Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Gary. And that was, I think, exactly the way my mother wrote that introduction.
I got it from her, Stephen. And thank you so much. You always do such a great job with the webinars. We appreciate you taking the time. I know you're a busy man. So getting right into it, Stephen, I want to talk what's the origin story? How'd you get into dental? How'd you get into helping people, helping businesses?
Yeah. So first off, Gary, I am not a dentist. And I think that it's an important point. I'm proud of that, primarily because of the fact that our expertise is in consumer behavior. So I'm your patient. I'm the guy who sits in your chair every day making decisions about whether to move ahead or move not. I'm a consumer behavior researcher. That's what we do. Sure. And dentistry found us. So years ago, we were working with all types of different businesses. And we had a dentist who came to one of our courses. He had been referred by one of his patients. Who knew that he loved continuing education. He was a disciple of L.D. Pankey and the Pankey Institute. And so he came to one of our courses, kind of apologized for being there in some ways. That's funny. Stayed the whole time and then got back in touch with us 3 or 4 months later. And he said, "We need to talk." And we said, "All right, explain that." And he said, "Well, I've applied the principles and the ideas, the techniques that you shared, and I've seen an amazing transformation in my practice. And I want you to see what this has done in the dental setting." And so that was really our first experience in dentistry. And that opened the door to meeting just some amazing people. One of the very first people that I met in dentistry was Dr. Pete Dawson, the late Pete Dawson, who was one of the great dental educators. And he actually came to one of our courses early on and dubbed what we were doing the missing link in dentistry. You know, he said,
"Love that.
I've been teaching clinical dentistry all these years." And he said, "What you have is the missing link that will connect great clinical care with patient acceptance. The great clinical skills don't come into play until after the patient says yes to treatment." And that's really where our secret sauce is that whole process of how do people really make decisions and how do you create the environment and the culture that makes it easier for patients to say yes to treatment. So let me give you a quick example, if that's okay, because that was a short
one. Absolutely.
I got a long answer. So One of the biggest mistakes in dentistry as a whole is that dentistry as an industry has adopted the scientific model as a business model. All right, what's the scientific model? Diagnose, treatment plan, present it, do it. That's the scientific model, and it's sound for science. You've got to identify what the problem is, come up with a possible solution, you know, present it, and then execute. If you translate that exact model and use it as a business model, okay, it works great in science, but if you use it as a business model, everything comes unraveled. To the consumer, the scientific model, when it gets translated to the business model, sounds like this. Here's the consumer message. Come in the first time, and we're going to charge you up front to find problems you never knew you had. And then we're going to work up a plan that's going to blow your financial mind, and then you're going to get really excited about doing it. That's what consumers hear. The whole have to have a complete and comprehensive exam, you know, before you get anything else done. And so every day in dental practices, patients call and they ask, how much is a cleaning? Oh, yeah, and I don't want the exam. I don't want the x-rays. Why? Because they don't want any more problems. There's no one in America that woke up this morning and said, you know, life's good. I have no problems. And satisfaction in life comes from solving problems. I'm going to go to my dentist so that she can give me more problems to solve. No one said that this morning, no more than anybody in dentistry got up this morning and said, you know, all those patients coming in that think they're just going to get their teeth cleaned, they got another thing coming. Yeah. So dentistry doesn't like to deliver bad news. Patients don't like to get bad news. We've adopted this model that doesn't work. It's amazing that anything gets done in dentistry at all. It's a complete disconnect. So the model's got to change if we're going to do a better job as an industry of serving patients. And two examples of this. Gary, what is the most prevalent disease in the world? There's a trivia quiz. I didn't prep you for this.
I am the not ready.
The most prevalent disease in the world, worldwide.
The cancer?
Periodontal disease. You know how I know that? Trivial pursuit. It's a question of trivial pursuit. So what we know is that according to the Centers for Disease Control, 50% of patients over the age of 30 have some form of periodontal disease. If you include gingivitis, it goes up to 80%.
No kidding.
And for most people, the older they get, then the higher the percentage is. And today we know that all of the other diseases that are related to periodontal disease, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, high cholesterol, everything that's inflammatory, it's all connected. So with that is what we're in business to do, coupled with the fact that dentistry is now the number one frontline healthcare profession. Number one. There's only one other profession in healthcare that sees more of America more often than dentistry does. Only one. And that's the pharmacist, because America's on drugs. But you never see the pharmacist. You just check out with the pharmacy tech. So dentistry owns America. We see more of America more often than any other healthcare specialty, any other vertical. So for us, we hold then, if we see more of America more often than anybody else in healthcare, we ought to be better at it than everybody else. So that's at Total Patient Service, that's our mission, is to make dentistry the number one leading patient service segment in healthcare. We ought to do it better than anybody else. And in order to do that, we have to do things differently than the rest of healthcare. Everybody else in healthcare is into diagnose, treatment plan, present. We can do it differently and create a whole different patient experience that will lead to more patients getting work done that they need, like getting periodontal disease treated and taking care of their restorative health, It is this, what happens here is it's the gateway to health. You don't take care of this, it's a domino effect that leads to all kinds of other problems. So that was a very long answer to a very short question.
That was great, because first off, I need to pick up a book and read up on some things. But no, that was great, and I appreciate it, because it segues nicely in this whole process. I want to get into yours. And, you know, we wake up, we go to work, we get the job done, go home, and it's sort of the status quo. And the practices that win, that grow, that have that longevity in their communities and push that status quo, I want to talk about them and how you help them. So what's your first step in sort of assessing a practice that enlists your help in identifying where to start, what to work on, what to begin building, what to tear down, and sort of evolve and shape in a different way to build that positive culture and get to that elite point?
So let's go back to principles. So one of the things, Gary, I believe in is going back to the foundation of what I call natural laws. So natural laws are different than rules. People make rules, and rules are made to be broken versus a natural law. Now, who makes a natural law? God or nature? So I call them natural laws. If I hold my phone up and I open my hand, it's going to go down to the ground. If I do that 100 times, it'll go down 100 times. It's called the natural law of gravity. It's consistent. It's predictable. It happens every time. Yeah. To the point that if I open my hand and it flies up in the air, you're going to clear out of here, right? Podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Not the way it's done.
So yeah. I always go back to truth first, because if we can look at what are the immutable truths that run the show, and then base all of the philosophies and the systems grounded in what's actually true, we're going to have a much higher likelihood of success. So here's a truth that has to do with patient service, case acceptance, culture. All of us make decisions emotionally first, and then we justify that emotional decision with logic. It's proven by neuroscience. We process things emotionally. It's that fight or flight response first, and then we rationalize and we process that. So as an example of that, Gary, you're familiar with speed dating? I mean, not that you've done it, but...
I know it. Heard of it. I know it. I've heard of it.
This is a fascinating example of this. So real quick, speed dating was an invention of a Jewish rabbi in New York City who was concerned about the social lives of his young, single, professional congregants who he did not think were getting out enough, weren't dating enough. He wanted more family creation in his congregation.
Sure.
He had this idea of getting them all together in the back room of a restaurant, and guys on one side, girls on the other, and they'd have 6 minutes to talk to each other. And then they'd shift and talk to the next person, and so forth for about an hour. So they gave him an opportunity to talk about, you know, 10 different people. And then he gave him a ballot to vote for the person or persons they wanted to spend more time with. So this idea, this is back in the 90s, went viral, spread across the country. The psychologists and sociologists got involved. And what they found when they studied this exercise is that the decision most people were making in the first 6 seconds did not change for most people at the end of 6 minutes. Now, can you make a rational decision in 6 seconds? No. It's an emotional... Right, yeah. Emotional response. But then what they found is they'd make that emotional decision, and then they would spend the rest of the time rationalizing why they felt the way they did. We make decisions emotionally, we justify with logic. Patients are the same way, right? So they're making emotional decisions consciously or unconsciously every step along the way, and then trying to figure out why the way they do. And they're rationalizing what that is. So one of the most neglected core topics in healthcare is what are we doing that impacts the patient's emotional state? Because that emotional state is going to impact their ultimate decision. So we start back. One of the key areas that we look at is culture. When the patient walks into the practice, what kind of a culture are they walking into? So what culture? One of my favorite definitions comes from the late Dr. Clayton Christensen. He was a Harvard Business School professor. He is considered to be the father of innovation. he did some amazing research on innovation. One of his seminal works is called The Innovator's Dilemma. And he's done some fascinating research. And he also taught the most popular class at Harvard Business School entitled, How Will You Measure Your Life? And that is also converted that into book form. So highly regarded. And his definition of culture is this. He said, culture is the combination of priorities and processes and what an organization and the people in it do to act on them daily. So let's dissect that real quick. Priorities, what matters to you? What's important? What are your values? What are your beliefs? So priorities, processes, what systems have you put in place that reflect those values that allow you to act and do business based on those core values? And then how good of a job do you do at executing on those on a daily basis? That's culture, priorities, processes, action. So let's start with what your priorities and what your values are. So let me share a quick example and then a takeaway for what any practice can do to get started in this area. Every organization, Gary, has a culture either by design or by default.
Sure.
Either it just kind of evolved without much thinking or thought being put into it, or you consciously thought through, this is the kind of culture that I want. One of the two. Most organizations, it's a culture by default. Just kind of happened. We are big fans of a culture by design. So here's something, one of the many things you can do to create a culture by design. So let me give you a quick, just a quick origin story example of how the exercise I'm going to suggest you do came about. For many years, our business was based in the Texas Hill Country outside of San Antonio, Texas, about an hour and a half outside of San Antonio in a beautiful, amazing part of the country. We had a training center there on a ranch that overlooked the Guadalupe River Valley. And as the business started to grow, we started doing more events and speeches around the country. So it got to the point, Gary, that on a weekly basis, I would get in my car out in the Texas Hill Country. I would drive an hour and a half to the San Antonio airport. I would wait for an hour for my flight, fly for an hour from San Antonio to Dallas, Texas, the home of American Airlines. And then from Dallas, I'd go out to the rest of the country because Dallas is the hub. Then returning, same thing, fly into Dallas, wait, fly to San Antonio, drive home. So I was sitting in the Dallas airport one Friday night. It was about 9:30, waiting for my connection to San Antonio, knowing that I wouldn't get home until 1 a.m. And I looked at my watch. It's 9:30. And I had this amazing thought. I thought to myself, you know, if I lived here, I'd be home right now. So I started doing the math. And the result came out that I was spending a full month in terms of hours, a full month every year commuting from my home outside of San Antonio to Dallas in order to be able to get to the rest of the country. So when I expanded that over the years that were to follow, I thought this probably isn't a great use of time. So we sat down as a team and through a process of planning and discussion, we moved our company headquarters from the Texas Hill Country to Dallas-Fort Worth. So built a new office. Most of the team made the move. We hired some new team members. And anytime you make that kind of an expansion or move, it's an exciting time. It kind of gives you the spirit of renewal and excitement. And so on one of the first Monday mornings that we had moved into our new office, and we had, at that time, our cadence was we would do a weekly meeting every Monday morning at 7:45. And this particular morning, you know, I was there early, had the agenda planned, waiting for the team, great anticipation for our meeting. 7:45 came and went. 7:50, 7:55, a few people, you know, walked in. And then I think we got started a little bit after 8. Now, I've got figurative smoke blowing out my ear, right? Because we were supposed to start at 7:45. And just before those words started coming out of my mouth, I realized there was a reason we didn't get started until after 8 o'clock. And that reason was the leader, who had done a very lousy job of clearly communicating expectations. It goes back to one of my favorite quotes from Peter Drucker. Now, Peter Drucker is considered to be one of the greatest management minds of the last century. And one of the things he said was, he said, the spirit of an organization starts at the top. If the spirit of an organization is great, it's because the spirit of its top people is great. If it rots, it does so because it decays from the top.
Love that.
Oh, yeah. There I am, and I'm saying to myself, if this is the result you got, dude, go look in the mirror, because you're the one who produced the result. So I didn't say anything. We had the meeting as planned. Once we had the meeting, I left the office. This particular morning, I very quietly left the office. I went and found a quiet place and spent a couple hours and produced a document. This document today, we call it a culture guide. So basically what it is, Gary, and I had never, to that point in my career, I'd never seen anybody do this. It was a roadmap. What I wrote was a roadmap, a behavioral norms roadmap for the team interaction, the behavior that I expected from our team. So in other words, how are we going to play the game? If we're going to build a team culture, then what are the rules of the game? How are we going to play together, right? So for example, one of those cultural items was when you're early, you're on time, which means, and basically what it says is that every team wants to work, every team member wants to work with other team members who they can rely on, right? That they can depend on, that they know are going to show up for them. And it starts first thing every day. That's why we believe that when you're early, you're on time. When you're on time, you're late. And when you're late, you're lost. So that became the cultural expectation, that when we have a meeting at 7:45, you show up at 7:40, 7:35, 7:30, you don't show up 5-10 minutes late. You are early, right? So that's an example of a cultural a cultural expectation. Here's another one. If you don't know, don't say. Right? In other words,
I like that one.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Question, you don't know the answer. Don't make something up. Just say, you know what, I don't know, but I'll be happy to do the research, and I'll get back to you with an accurate answer. There's nothing that erodes trust faster than somebody who's popping off with things that they're saying or fact that aren't necessarily so, right? That's an example. Here's another one, is being happy to do it. Now, this is a cultural thing that has slept into our, you know, into our vernacular. I don't know where it came from, but Gary, more often than not, when you thank somebody for doing something or you ask somebody for a favor, a lot of times the response is no problem. Both negative. No, and problem. So by virtue of saying it wasn't a problem, it apparently was. Yep. Right?
Yep.
So in this original culture guide, what we said was, in our organization, when you thank somebody, if somebody thanks you for something or asks you for something, the appropriate response is happy to do it. Meaning, because it creates a whole different spirit. Instead of saying, no, no problem. It's like, no, happy to, I am happy to, I'm happy to serve. I'm happy to help. That creates a whole different cultural feeling than no problem. So that original culture guide had 20 different items on it like that. Of this is the kind of culture I want to work in. This is the kind of place where I want to work. This is the kind of place where when I walk in the door, I'm stoked to be there because this is the way we all interact as a team. So I wrote it all out, went back. We had another team meeting on a different day, and I apologized to the team. I said, you know what? In my leadership responsibility, I have not done my duty to clearly communicate some important things in our organization, like our culture and what's expected. And I said, so I'm going to ask your permission to do a redo. And what I've written down here is a description of the kind of culture that I want us to create. Many of these things exist already in our culture, and many of them we're going to work on together as a team. So I want the space to be able to share these with you, and then I'd like your input of other things that I may have missed that you want to be a part of our culture and our work together. These are, again, this is how the team interacts with each other. This is an internal-based roadmap. So we talked about it. They added some additional things to it, and then we went about using that on a regular basis. So, for example, every week in our weekly meeting, we review some aspect of that culture guide. We review it, sure. We talk about it, we recognize it. So we have little awards that we give for people who exemplify, you know, a specific aspect of our culture. We have a team of 360-degree team evaluation where everybody gives each other feedback on the different aspects of the culture we've decided on. So I've never met, Gary, a team member who didn't want a great place to work. Everybody wants a great, would you like a great place to work? Everybody wants a great place to work. But when you think about it, how often in any organization do we have a conversation about what it takes to make this a great place to work and what your responsibility is? So like, Gary, you want a great place to work? Here's what you got to do. Here's your response. Here's what everybody else. But having a conversation about what it really takes to make it a great place to work. So this is going through that whole process of creating a culture guide for your organization, for your practice, is a building block to creating a great patient experience. For example, we did some exit interviews with patients coming out of dental practices. We wanted to know what they noticed the most. In your patient experience, in your visit, what did you notice the most? Now, I was expecting answers that had to do with decor and that up-to-date technology and all that stuff. None of that. Top two answers. Number one, how the doctor treated the team.
That's huge.
And number
two, that is huge.
The popular answer was how the team treated each other. Now, why do you think that's the case? Because, I mean, we're watching the dynamics everywhere we go. We're watching those dynamics because how the doctor treats the team, intuitively, you could conclude, if I stay in this practice long enough, that's how they're going to treat me. And the same thing with team member interaction, right? It influences.
That's huge.
Gary, you've walked into a professional practice, I'm sure. And the moment you walked in the door, you could tell that something was going on, right? You could just feel the tension, the nonverbal communication.
Yeah.
So it impacts patient decisions. So my challenge here, and I'll share a resource that'll help you with this. My challenge to everyone in every organization is create a culture by design. Don't let it be a culture by default. Make it a culture by design. And no matter how long you've been in practice, it doesn't matter. It's never too late. It's never too late to be a better leader. It's never too late to communicate more clearly. It's never too late to create more definition around what you really want. So sit down, create your culture guide, get clear, sit down with your team, give them input so that they've got the rules of the road. They know what you expect and what they can expect from each other. So that's step number one. Then the next question is, if we have the rules of the road for how we're going to treat each other, now let's take the next step. What are the rules of the road for how we treat patients? Now, there's some similarities, but they're differences. It's based on this principle. I don't believe, and this is going to sound like heresy, Gary, from a guy that started a company called Total Patient Service, I don't believe in a patient-centered practice.
You don't?
Nope.
Okay, got to get into that a little bit.
Here's why. I've been in way too many patient-centered practices where there is so much chaos and background noise in the practice culture, how team members treat each other, how the doctor treats the team. You know, there's so much built up dysfunctional behavior going on in the team that nobody can focus on the patient. Yeah. You can't focus on patient care if you don't have a team that's aligned and working in harmony for the benefit of the patient. So job one, get your house in order, right? Do the homework on the inside. How are we going to work together as a team? Team first, because when we got it dialed in as a team, then it frees us up to do what we need to do for the patient. So culture guide first. Once we got that dialed in, now let's take a look at the patient side of things. So process number two is this, to define your service values, meaning when you're patient facing, what are the core values that matter the most? And for most practices, for most organizations, we recommend that they dial it down, they drill it down to four or five core values. So what in patient service and patient care, what matters to us? Like you could take a whole laundry list of values, like safety would be a patient service value, courtesy, comfort, education and communication. I mean, you could make a whole list of different values, but then what are the ones that are core to your organization and what your commitment is to patient service? So I define those first. What are they? Give them a definition, build out some examples of each one. We like to define what we call the simple steps of service. So what are the patient service things that you do for every patient when they come in? For example, one of those simple steps of service might be use the patient's name. Now, how hard is that? But how often do you go into healthcare environments that they don't use their name? Or the one, here's one. This is a pet peeve of mine. Gary, my whole Instagram is Steve's Peeves. So these patient service and customer service things that that drive all of us crazy. Here's one that has to do with patient service. When I go into pediatric environments, right? When I go to the I got kids. When I go to the pediatrician, the pediatric dentist, anything to pediatrics, even at the school, the cultural norm is to not call me by my name, but to call me dad. Yeah. So I got the nurse is sitting there saying, okay, well, dad, this is what's going on. Or the doctor, dad, I'm not your dad. Call me dad. Call me by my name. Now that maybe I'm the odd one out on that. But if you've defined your patient service values and say, you know what, names are important. Yeah, Dale Carnegie had it right nearly 100 years ago when he wrote how to win friends and influence people, that the most important word in any language is a person's name. Yeah, he had that spun on. We use names. That's personalized service, right? So steps of service, right? We define those. So this whole then project, again, create your culture guide, then you're going to focus on your service values. And when we get done with it, Gary, the result is this. This is an example of what we call a service value card. It has, in this particular case, the four service values and then examples of each one. It has the simple steps of service, what they do with every patient in every interaction, and their core values. It has, but it embodies in one simple document I can keep with me. It embodies our commitment to patient service. So I've got a roadmap, a compass by which to make patient service decisions. It's our team commitment.
Super interesting.
So, when we talk about culture, and there's a lot of different aspects, that's where we start. Culture guide. What are the rules of the road for how you're going to work together as a team? Let's define them. Let's agree on them. Let's go to work on them. How we work together. And then what is our patient service commitment? What are our service values, our simple steps of service? All of those things that embody what our commitment to patient service is. Now, if we just started with those two things, understanding how I work together with my team and understanding what our commitment is to our patients, and I've got a roadmap for each, patients in this country would have a totally different patient experience. And dentistry's got the opportunity to change the game. Our healthcare system is broken. There is no question about that. Dentistry, for the most part, has done a good job of keeping itself separated from the whole medical insurance mess, gratefully. Dentistry has the opportunity to put a stake in the ground and to be the premier patient service experience in healthcare. If you do the work, and this is just one example of the work that needs to be done, define your culture, define your patient service commitment, and then work on that as a team on a regular basis to operationalize it and make it come alive with every patient every day.
Yeah, I love that. Love that. And again, I think I'm going to lead every follow-up question with, I need to pick up a book. But my next question, Steve, is, you know, obviously I walk into a dental practice and I've had exceptional experiences. One of them that, as you were talking, I was just thinking about my personal, you know, a couple of years ago, right before I got married, you know, I went in for a cleaning, just preparing. And when the office manager found out that I was getting married, before I sat in my chair, the hygienist and the dentist came in with some sort of gift. I can't remember what the gift was. It was like a goodie bag full of just stuff to congratulate me. And I thought to myself, like, wow, I'm never going to leave this place. I'm never leaving this practice. And, you know, culture's got to play into that. The fact that they are enabled to do something like that and have that at the ready for whether it be a wedding, a birthday, an anniversary, what have you. And it wasn't dental goodies. It was stuff that, you know, I use it at the beach. It's a Bluetooth speaker and a few other things. Like, that went a really, really long way in keeping me, because, you know, I had to cancel a few times. I moved on, moved to a couple of different locations, you know, lived in a few different locations, but I'm willing to drive that hour and 15 minutes to see that dental practice, to be at that dental practice, to see that OM, to see that hygienist, and to see that dentist for what they did. So I noticed it, you know, probably 7 to 10 minutes into the appointment, between sitting down, being called up, and being in that chair, I felt something there. What they've done to keep me long term, I see it, as you mentioned. There's no turmoil. There's no weird silence or awkward silence, the hygienist and the dentist walk me up to the office manager, to the front desk, and they recap everything and they talk. And then as I leave, they're talking about lunch 2 seconds later and how they're all going to eat together. So that really, really, you hit it on the head. I love what you said there about keeping the patient and enabling that that type of culture to blossom and bloom. So with all that, you touched on a lot of it already. Sort of, what are the key ingredients? So if you make a good first impression based on the culture you've built and enabled at the practice, how do you keep that going long term? Because no group of people is never going to not argue or have a disagreement. How do you keep that sustained so that every single time Gary walks through that dental practice or anyone, that it seems like it's just rainbows and butterflies and just the perfect environment?
You got it.
How do you keep that going?
So here's the piece. You remember our original definition, priorities and processes. Okay. So that's culture. And then how we act on them daily, how we act on them. So processes. So what are the processes you put in place to keep your culture healthy and continue growing? So in a dental environment, for example, one process is what we call the morning opportunity meeting. Now, in dentistry, many people have a meeting they call a morning huddle. That's what they do in football. And, you know, they call the play and they go do it. That's not what this is. It is the morning opportunity meeting is here's we're going to take 15 minutes and strategize for the day where all the opportunities are to provide exceptional service. So, for example, if we're going through the patients for the day and we say, you know, Gary's coming in today and this is his birthday month this month. In fact, his birthday is tomorrow, right? There's a great opportunity for us to really pour the love on and give him a great experience and recognize his birthday or whatever it is, right? It starts first thing every day. So one of the recommendations for a healthy culture, process-oriented, is you start that meeting every day with the same question. And that question is, what's the best thing that happened yesterday? What's the best thing that happened in our patient care day yesterday? What's the best thing that happened? And here's the dynamic. There's some fascinating research behind this. But the dynamic is if everybody on the team knows that's how we're going to start the day, then as I'm driving to work, what am I thinking? Okay, what was the best thing that happened yesterday? Because I know that's going to be the first topic of conversation and I may be called on to, you know, share the best thing. So then what happens is we start the meeting. So Gary, if you and I are in the meeting and I'm leading the meeting, it's all right. Good morning, everybody. We're going to start the way we start every day. Oh, and by the way, everybody was early, right? Because when you're early, you're on time. You're not waiting for everybody to show up. We're going to start like we do every day. Best thing from yesterday. Gary, would you share the best thing that happened for you yesterday in patient care? And then you'll be ready because you knew this is was going to happen.
Yeah.
And you might be called on. And then you'll have a short story that you can share. Like you know, you might say, we know Steve Anderson came in yesterday and he shared with me that he's getting married. And we talked about the wedding pictures, which evolved into a conversation about how the smile is going to look in those wedding pictures. And before we knew it, we were talking about 8 veneers, right? Before the wedding. So, you know, just because I was interested in what was going on in his life and it turned into some great treatments. So what I learned from that, it was a great reminder to be interested in our patients and what's really going on in their lives. Because many times there's something we can do to enhance that, right? So now what did everybody learn? You shared a short anecdote and then everybody on the team goes, oh yeah, I need to do that too. So we just had a short training session just by sharing good things. So I start positive and then I end positive. So I always have an ending. We have a resource that we provide at Total Patient Service called the Morning Opportunity Meeting Action Thoughts. So it's, and you can go to totalpatientservice.com and subscribe to this. But basically, we feed you a great way to finish your morning meeting every day. Here's a quote. Here's a patient service action that corresponds with that. So that's an example of a daily habit that builds a positive culture. Culture is no different than fitness. You got to work out.
Yeah.
In other words, there's habits. There are things you build in to your regular routine that build and enhance your culture. And it's not one and done. It is a continual effort, always, always working on it. But what are the systems you have in place to keep it renewed, keep it healthy, keep it positive?
Love that. Love that. Steve, I want to shift gears here just a little bit, because what I've seen, you know, I work on a marketing team. I work in advertising marketing, you know, growing. And that's, it's been my career. So when I think about like some of the local businesses that I've interacted with, you know, just in casual conversation, doesn't have to be dental practice, but one of the things that stands out to me is oftentimes, you know, community events, sponsorships like school sports that gets a practice's name out there on the name of, on the back of, you know, 20 kids t-shirts as they're playing t-ball or football or what have you, whatever the sport is. How is that? I guess my question would be around how much of that needs to be incorporated to really grow a positive culture and atmosphere around the practice inside of the community. Because what I've seen is, you know, I've worked with a bunch of local businesses, small businesses, you know, they really rely on activities like that to bring in new customer flow, or in this case, new patient flow. Where does all of that sort of that community outreach play in building that positive culture?
So one of the aspects of culture that we talk a lot about is the concept of doing good. Now, let me contrast that to a phrase that we commonly hear in our culture of giving back. You know, we always hear about organizations who give back and people who give back and the whole deal. And I take exception to that. I don't believe in giving back because I think it implies the wrong message. If you're giving something back, what does it imply? That you took something that didn't belong to you. I don't know about you, Gary, but when I was growing up, that phrase was never positive. Give that back. Give that back to your brother. Give that back to your sister.
Yeah, I heard that a lot.
I got off on deciding that that was a good way to describe, you know, doing community, whatever it is. So I prefer to refer to those kind of activities as doing good. Right?
Doing
good.
I love that.
So, and here's the difference. Giving back implies charity. Doing good is much broader than giving back. So you think about a, you know, a typical dental practice. What are all the things they do that are doing good? They're providing jobs for the community. They're helping people improve their, not just their oral health, but their overall health. They're injecting a level of happiness into people's lives. They're a positive force in the community. They're giving people something to hope for. I mean, you go down the list of what are all the things we do do good. And then when you talk about specific activities, you can go do health fairs. You can go do charitable where, you know, there's a lot of things, activities you can do that engage that aspect of doing good. Every business is in the business of doing good. Well, there's a few.
Yeah. I hear that. I hear that for sure.
Most businesses have some, you know, they're doing good. They're making the world a better place for the most part. Dental practices surely are. So that's a, you know, I challenge teams to do that. Make a list of what are all the things you do that do good. And then what are other things you can do strategically to expand that into the community? Like you're talking about health fairs and coaching. And I have a, one of my favorite examples of this is in Michigan. One of the, it was the Ray McKinley, who passed away just a couple of years ago, was just such an amazing example of this. This is a guy, Gary, a dentist, who for his whole career, every morning during the school year, he taught a leadership course at the local high school.
No kidding.
Every day. This is like for 20 years. And it was a first period class. He developed the curriculum. He got permission from the school. The school endorsed it as an elective. And every day for 20 years, that was the first place he went every day, was taught this. Well, when Ray passed away a couple of years ago, can you imagine the community outpouring of just the thousands of people he had influenced, not just in his dental practice, but the students that he educated and he taught and holds out a force for good, community of doing good. I'm not suggesting everybody go teach a high school class every morning, but there's so many examples of that I have seen in dentistry of just teams that do good and how that positively impacts their culture and their patient service. You can't help but feel better when you're out, you know, out doing good. And probably one of my favorite examples of this is our Smiles for Life campaign. And Gary, I think we've talked about this in the past, but this was the brainchild of Dr. Jeff Gray, who's a dentist in San Diego, California, who wanted to find a way to do more good in his community. And what came out of that has now become the largest, longest running charity campaign in dentistry. It's called Smiles for Life. And for 3 months every year, participating practices commit to whiten teeth in the community. So anybody can come in and get their teeth whitened as long as clinically they qualify. And 100% of the fee goes to charity, goes to
dental-related
charitable projects. So that campaign nationwide has raised over $50 million for children and dental-related charities. And it's just, it's a fun way, patient-centered, for a practice to do good, doing good. And I'll just, as a footnote for that, you can go to smilesforlife.org, and it tells you all about the campaign. We are grateful to UltraDent. UltraDent supplies all the whitening materials for free, including shipping, which is an amazing contribution and commitment from UltraDent to do that. So the office donates their time. UltraDent donates the product. We have all kinds of companies that donate different aspects of it. And the patient donates the money so that all the money can go to worthwhile causes. So that's an example
incredible.
Of just doing good. I mean, there's so many, but I consider it to be a critical building block for a culture of success.
That's amazing. Folks, I will have that link to Smiles for Life in the episode description for you all to check out, in addition to the Total Patient Services website as well, for you all to check out. I will not let that one go. We will definitely have that in the link in the episode description for you all to check out. Please do so. So thank you for all that, Steven. I was just thinking about that, teaching high school students. You're just, you know, I went to a rather large high school. I'm just thinking about my graduating class, over 1,000 kids. Those 1,000 kids, many of them have kids, and the impact that this doctor had on their lives translates for beyond generations. So it's a incredible, incredible story there. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. That was huge. So just shifting again slightly, as you work with these practices, you know, I've come across plenty of business owners that I've worked with in the past that, you know, when they think of culture, they're just like, you know, it is. And maybe that's the culture that you mentioned by default. It just kind of lands there. Mm-hmm. There's no real belief behind it. But if you could put in a way how culture is measured in growth, in success, in the teams, in my head, I'm thinking you don't have as much staff turnover. You don't have issues within the practice. amongst the team. You don't ever have to worry about your patients coming in and potentially seeing some kind of quarrel between staff. But is there, can you share some measurable results that, that you kind of look at as you work with the practices, or some of the practices have realized in working with you?
Yeah. So you've hit on a couple of them. So culture can be measured in terms of results in team turnover. Very expensive to recruit and bring on a new team member. In patient turnover, it's 80% easier to retain a patient than it is to get a patient. So patient retention, right? We look at the patient reappointment rate, how many patients that came in today reappointed and scheduled their next appointment. And the pre-appoint rate, excuse me, which is how many active patients have a future scheduled appointment. So that's an indication of, do they want to come back, right? Is the culture such that they want to come back? So those are some, you know, in terms of results. Then the other is, how many five-star online reviews do we have? Now, what do patients say about our culture? Because when you look at reviews, reviews is really an evaluation of your culture. They're not good judges of clinical quality of care. I wish they were, but we're not. So really, those reviews are, what was it like to be in this space with these people, and how did they treat me, and what was the culture like? It's really a cultural evaluation. So those are the key things we look at: reviews, patient retention, team turnover are three of the biggest indicators. So one of the things that I, you know, suggest, Gary, is, I know we're winding down here, and here's, if I could summarize in terms of where to get started. We talked about a lot of different aspects.
That was my next question. So you read my mind. So perfect.
You know, for most teams, here's where I recommend you get started. Define your culture. Culture by design. Codify it. Put it in writing. Create your culture guide. And then once you've done that, work on your service values. So the service values, what are you committed to in terms of patient care? And then what does that look like in terms of day-to-day activities? What do you expect from your team? So here's a share a resource that it will help get started. I don't know about you, Gary, but I'm a lot better editor than I am a creator.
Same.
Edit somebody else's work. So here's another resource. If you go to crowncouncil.com/culture. So Crown Council, and that's spelled C-I-L, right? C-R-O-W-N-C-O-U-N-C-I-L, crowncouncil.com/ culture. And there you will find access to culture building resources where you can get started. It'll walk you through how to create the culture guide. It'll give you a copy of the book, The Culture of Success. So there's your book, Gary.
There it is.
And it has a roadmap that gives you exactly how you construct some of those aspects that we've talked about today. So that would be a recommended starting point. So it's just crowncouncil.com/culture. And that'll give you a starting point to create a culture of success by design.
Folks, we'll have that link as well in the episode description for you in case you missed it. Steve, thank you so much for that. I have two quick ones before we wrap here. In my conversations on this podcast, as you know, on the webinars that we've done and beyond, a lot of times what I've heard from guests on this show and again, in those discussions on the webinars is, I want to feel like I am enabled to do a good job at work. Okay. And a portion of that, you know, in addition to the support that you mentioned and building that from day one, that positive culture, shaping it yourself instead of letting it kind of default into whatever it turns into, is tools and technology. You know, a builder can't build a building without the tools and the supplies that they need to build it, to stand it up. So as you go through your assessment with a practice, as you go through their planning and their growth opportunity and the phases for that, where does the tools and the tech kind of fall? And do you actually discuss it? Is that part of the plan to enable and to allow all that stuff to kind of fall into place and, you know, begin that search of whatever solution they need?
Yeah. So let's go back to the ingredients we talked about: priorities, processes, and action. So when I talk about processes, technology, equipment, all those things are part of processes. And then how do we use them to ultimately accomplish whatever the patient service goal is? So there are some times when technology stands in the way. Technological progress doesn't always lead to better patient service.
Right.
Sometimes we really have to reevaluate and say, is this creating a better patient experience, or are we just doing this for technology's sake? Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should. Right? Not everything is possible, should be done. So it always goes back to, what's your focus? What do you want to make happen? What is the patient service promise, the cultural commitment? And then does the tool fit the reality to accomplish the goal that we want to accomplish? That always ought to be the compass.
Love that. Love that. And I always ask this, I call it the inspiration corner. It's very corny, but I love to ask this question to our guests as we wrap up. In your career throughout the years, two-part, what's the best piece of advice you've received as you progressed and the career skyrocketed? And part two, how do you reciprocate? What's the best piece of advice you offer up to an individual or a team that you're helping out?
It's the same. The answer is the
perfect.
Same. Best piece of advice that I got early on was from a mentor of mine who challenged me to go find a mentor who had done what I thought I wanted to do and figure out a way to build a productive, healthy relationship with that person so I could learn from their experience. And the mentors to me are one of the most important aspects of creating a culture of success. You can't do it on your own. And so looking for great examples, copying them with care, the things that can be copied, but learning from others. But yeah, go get a mentor. And in today's culture, where we become so isolated and separated and the whole deal, this becomes a real project, is to develop really, really great, healthy mentor relationships. So that's the best advice I've received. And that's the advice I give to any professional, old or young, no matter how many years in practice. We do a whole program for high school and college students called Eagle University. And that's one of the core principles we teach there, is go get mentors, because they will show you and open doors you never knew were possible. They'll show you things you never didn't even know existed. It'll create a whole new world. Go get a mentor.
That's brilliant. I love that. Absolutely love that. Folks, before we wrap up, just a reminder, I will have all of the links Steve mentioned in this episode in the description, and we'll pop it up on screen for you as well, just here in a moment, as well as connect with Steven on LinkedIn. Just connect with him, get to know him.
And there's a lot of Steve Andersons out there, Gary. So my different...
I'll link that too.
My middle initial, which is J, so... and then on Instagram, it's the Stephen J. Anderson.
Perfect. Well, so. Perfect. Thank you so much. And this was fantastic, Steve. I hope we can do this again real soon. I know we're going to do some more webinars with you. Those are always a great turnout. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with this audience, sharing your experience and that last bit of advice. I really, really enjoy that. That I guess I should call it the corny corner instead of the inspiration corner, but it moves me every single time just to hear from people like you sharing their experiences. So I appreciate you, appreciate the insights, and thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Gary. Thanks for having me, and best of luck as you create your culture by design, and look forward to working with you on that journey.
Absolutely. And folks listening in today, if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like and subscribe to the Modern Practice Podcast, Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, wherever you listen in. We appreciate you tuning in and stay tuned as we've got more great episodes coming your way. Thanks for tuning in. Till next time, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the Modern Practice Podcast. If you enjoyed today's conversation, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or SoundCloud for new episodes. And follow Rectangle Health on social media for more helpful information, news, and event details. Thanks for tuning in.